Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9, 1 week after Fun Drive. So I don't know how much we made, but maybe we made a good amount. Welcome to the show. I was reading something about Titan. So it reminded me of the exciting days, those days when Cassini was in Titan, are in the Saturn system, and then, I'm trying to find something, how much we made. But anyway, okay, it's not showing. So Cassini was in, it's somewhere there. Okay, I'll read it later. Thank you. Okay, I can't see. I'm blind, as almost as blind as a bat, so I'll see later. Thank you very much. It's on the wall somewhere. So what happened is... Someone's trying to use sign language to tell me, and I'm not getting it. So, oh, maybe they're going to write it. So let's see. It's going to be, oh, it's okay. I'll tell you guys later. I'll go on a break. I'll run outside. I'll look. So it reminded me of the days when Cassini was in Saturn system, and it was really exciting. It was there for quite a few years doing groundbreaking research. And apparently what they say is there's going to be decades more of data to come. A lot of the data hasn't even been opened yet. So I was reading about Titan's atmosphere and how something about the forces of on the atmosphere itself varied according to height. And that makes sense. And it was quite an interesting examination about it. And then I threw the article away. I should have brought it with me. So I was looking about Titan, and it's just nice to go back in time to see what they were doing and how we were all excited about it. It says here, also celebrating John Glenn's historic mission on February 20th, 1962. So how many years is that? 58 years ago. When John Glenn went to space, sent a man to orbit Earth, and after 3 years of training, Glenn rocketed into space aboard the Mercury capsule Friendship 7. He became the third American in space and the first to orbit, the first to orbit Earth. The historical flight was no easy feat. At the end of the first orbit, a yaw attitude jet clogged, forcing Glenn to abandon the automatic control system and use the manual electrical fly-by-wire system. And this just recalls for me a lot of things that happened, like in the early Apollo missions when they went to the moon. The first time they went around, they didn't know if it was going to work. And when the astronauts lifted off from the moon for the first time, they didn't know. That was the first time they ever did it. There was no trial runs. So there was lots of space exploration that was very risky, and people perished, people died. So apparently now it's much safer, but sometimes there are still accidents. And my favorite is John Kettinger, he volunteered to go up high in the atmosphere and jump from a balloon down to Earth. And isn't that cool? On his second try, he passed out. He started spinning at 100 RPM. If you spin, I best believe it's 180 to 200 RPM, your organs and brains are scrambled. So I believe at 35,000 feet, his parachute automatically deployed. And in his third time, his hand swelled up so much, there was a hole in his spaceship. So a lot of these brave astronauts go up there, and just like this one, I didn't know that the automatic control failed, so he had to use the electrical manual fly-by-wire system. So in 4 hours and 56 minutes, John Glenn circled the globe 3 times, reaching speeds of more than 17,000 miles per hour. The successful mission concluded with a splashdown and recovery in the Atlantic Ocean, 800 miles southeast of Bermuda. John Glenn instantly became a hero. President John Kennedy awarded him the Space Congressional Medal of Honor. Schools and streets across the country were named after him. There was also the, for me, it's kind of, I'm not really connected to it, but there is the Spitzer Space Telescope that went out of service last week. And I'll try to get something about the Spitzer Space Telescope. So there's some anniversaries and some eventful happening. And let's see, Spitzer Space Telescope. I'm going to bring it up now and see what it says. The Spitzer Space Telescope, formerly the Space Infrared Telescope, was an infrared telescope launched in 2003 and retired on January 30, 2020. So a couple weeks ago, or a week or so ago. The planned mission period was to be 2.5 years, with a pre-launch expectation that the mission could extend to 5 or slightly more years until the onboard liquid helium supply was exhausted. So it actually lasted for 17 years, and I don't know how they didn't exhaust their fuel. This occurred on 15th May 2019. Without liquid helium to cool the telescope to the very low temperatures needed to operate, most of the instruments were no longer usable. However, the 2 short wavelength modules of the IRAC camera continued to operate with the same sensitivity as before the cryogen was exhausted and continued to be used into early 2020 in the Spitzer WARM mission. During the WARM mission, the two short wavelength channels of IRAC operated at 30 degrees K, still very cold, which is predicted to experience little to no degradation compared to the normal mission. To ascertain the performance, pre-launch tests, as well as tests at the University of Rochester, were conducted and confirmed the performance of the detectors. The Spitzer data from both the primary and warm phases are archived at the Infrared Science Archive. So I think this would be maybe an understatement, but wow. people who are not interested in astronomy, I think whenever people ask me what kind of show I do, I say astronomy. They say, wow, that's so cool. I love astronomy. And they don't have a chance to be exposed to it as much as they would. So I think everybody thinks astronomy is very interesting. But when the Spitzer Space Telescope goes out of commission, then 99.9999999% of the people don't know about it. But for people that keep up on it a bit, it's one telescope after another going up, outliving its mission, out in terms of years, outdoing itself in terms of results, and NASA just keeps doing this. So this was supposed to be a 2.5-year mission, and it went on for 17 years. So it was one of the great observatories. I believe it's still up there. And the only thing that could not keep it from keep going was the cooling part of it. Even though it was cooled to 30 degrees Kelvin, that was not cool enough for the other instruments. So the other instruments were set down. And some of the results are shown here. The first images taken by Spitzer Space Telescope were designed to show off the abilities of the telescope and showed a glowing stellar nursery, a big swirling dusty galaxy, a disk of planet-forming debris, and organic material in the distant universe. Since then, many monthly press releases have highlighted Spitzer's capabilities, as the NASA and ESA images do for the Hubble Space Telescope. So all kinds of beautiful infrared images, and we're going to miss it, but there's probably something on the way. What seems to be in vogue now is solar telescopes. In my email, I have quite a few things about the European Space Agency sending up a solar explorer. So now let's go to some astronomy. Let's read some astronomy. So there's an article here. It says, findings from NASA's Juno update Jupiter water mystery. Let's read about Jupiter. So Juno's up there now doing its business, and I believe there's had to be some adjustments made in terms of the orbit. Whenever you get up there, sometimes things mess up. So anyway, I'm going to write findings from NASA's Juno update Jupiter water mystery. And when I say things mess up, I guess I should add something goes wrong, and then the astronomers on Earth, the people, the scientists, do a miraculous job of somehow fixing things and getting it back on track. So that's what I really meant. It's sometimes there's these things that happen, and the people on Earth do an amazing job of fixing things up. So this JunoCan imager aboard NASA's Juno spacecraft captured Jupiter's southern equatorial region on September 1st, 2017. The image is oriented to Jupiter's pole, not visible, and it is called, the article is Finding from NASA's Juno Update Jupiter Water Mystery, dated February 18th, 2020 on NASA.gov. So it's going to talk about some water mystery on Jupiter. Let's read on. So again, the article is Finding from NASA's Juno Update Jupiter Water Mystery, February 18th, 2020. And here we go. NASA's Juno mission has provided its first science results of the amount of water in Jupiter's atmosphere. Published recently in the journal Nature Astronomy, the Juno results estimate that at the equator, water makes up about 0.25% of the molecules in Jupiter's atmosphere, almost three times that of the Sun. Okay. So it makes up, I don't think it's in quantity in terms of the Sun, I think it's in percentage. So in percentage-wise, there's 0.25% of the molecules in Jupiter's atmosphere are water, almost three times that of the Sun. These are also the first findings on the gas giant's abundance of water since NASA's 1995 Galileo mission suggested Jupiter might be extremely dry compared to the Sun. The comparison is based not on liquid water, but on the presence of its components, oxygen and hydrogen present in the Sun. An accurate estimate of the total amount of water in Jupiter's atmosphere has been on the wish list of planetary scientists for decades. The figure in the gas giant represents a critical missing piece to the puzzle of our solar system's formation. Jupiter was likely the first planet to form, and it contains most of the gas and dust that wasn't incorporated into the Sun. So astronomers have their theories of how sometimes Jupiter's migrated in, then migrated out, and planets moved around, and they use these explanations or these theories to explain how our solar system formed, how Jupiter got so big, how the rocky planets didn't get so big. So what I think what I might do, why don't I do this? Why don't I go for a break? Why don't we go have a sandwich or something? And let's see, pizza or whatever you want. You can have a nice break now. And then after the break, I'll come and talk more astronomy. It's very quiet here. There's only DP here. Hi, DP. So it's very quiet. DP's not going to make noise. So see you guys. I'll be back in a couple minutes. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Scan. When my builder fell down on the rat scan, people sold a super one a trip to the P now. While I settle off the shores of the Long Island, my father's clean, I mean my mind is clear when I transmit. I am the man of the family cause the pants fit. I want to let forensics prove that I commence groove with the thread from me to water. Hey, wanna say salutation to the nation of the Nubians. We about to place it in that 3 feet of stew again. I got the frequency to shatter Mr. Jones' perm. I got a hail of other honeys, cause a short term tally and a score for the shoddy in the jacket. For the brother, he's a nigga when he packs it. So get your butt out the sling. I start Muhammad floating up. That means I'm deaf, so like the autograph.
Hello, this is Marco, and you are listening to AstroTalk with De La Soul and Marco, me, astronomer on CITR 101.9.
Hey, yo, groove with the mayor, has it on the sayer, weigh the 18 mil, even still, sack a bag of troubles, make a single double, loop the coin and join the minimum wage. I had a plan if I was the man, I'd throw the jack, lay it low and leg mad. I uncondition my ways of the everyday sunset, waging my days to the one bet, cause your breaks, I have the capital cakes, weather mine, out of line, I'm busy till the early morning, freak the wig call, I get a tap on my shoulder, cause the days of the breaks be just about over, the arts of the six won't play my bag of chips, I got the sevens in my pocket somewhere, reasons for the cheer or temperature here, I keep it to the rear, and then I'm exploding.
I be the fabulous, but see, unlike the G, I got the flea up in the name. Over been my cousin from the Peter Pipe. I like the others latching on the wind. I caught the fame. Pass the task to ask me about the native tongue again. My friend, I tell you, Jungle Brothers on the run. I've shaken hands with many devils in the industry. Believe the genesis, life it will steals me that I'm deaf. Like the autographs, I sign until the break.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Say me wine up the ting till it pile up. Big bumper gal just a wine and a while up. Them a spoil me a stock till it pile up. My money no, so it my
you
money
dance
no.
Like you mean it. Dance like you on fire and you want me to know. You move like you mean it, shorty. See the look on your face. You either wanna fight or wanna make love, maybe both.
They got me looking at you, watching the way you wind it and pop it. One more time, go wine and pop it, yeah, yeah. Bumper that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, I could watch it all night. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Pull up on that bumper, girl, I just might. Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody singing.
Baby, chase it back to the floor, give us space. And
looking at me, watching the way I wanted him pop it. One more time, I wanted him pop it, yeah. Baby, that drink got me feeling alright. Pretty little thing, you could watch me all night. Pull up on this bomb, boy, I don't mind. Pull up on this bomb, boy, I don't mind.
Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. So when I jump behind it, push back on me.
Put it on your one time, my phone does that ring.
Hello?
Man, I ring off my cellular. Enough chat, but tell me what you tell her. Jump up, me the body drum till the cocky broke. My girl, you know, see nothing when you cock it up. Rough it up on the dresser top. We no need bed, me a done. Every man, I feel do what me say.
Hello?
I want it. Love when you wind up on it. Big, big bumper, you don't stall it. All if I in the morning.
Baby, push back when I jump behind it. When I jump behind it. When I jump behind it, push back on me. So baby, push back when I jump behind it. Baby, let me know you like it. Tonight, let's give them something to see. Everybody's in it.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar, the human serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron? Not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No.
would realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time. You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes, and also a universe where you're funny.
Okay, all right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment for your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk. So I'm going to get back to this article. It's on NASA.gov. And it's saying, finding from NASA's Juno mission, Jupiter water mystery. So I think what happened in a previous mission, when Galileo probe stopped transmitting 57 minutes into its Jovian descent in December 1995, it radioed out spectrometer measurements of the amount of water in Jupiter's atmosphere down to a depth of about 75 miles. 120 kilometers, where the atmospheric pressure reached about 320 pounds per square inch, or 22 bars. The scientists working on the data were dismayed to find 10 times less water than expected. Even more surprising, the amount of water the Galileo probe measured appeared to be still increasing at the greatest depth measured, far below where theories suggest the atmosphere should be well mixed. In a well mixed atmosphere, the water content is constant across the region, and let me read that again. In a well-mixed atmosphere, the water content is constant across the region and more likely to represent a global average. In other words, it is more likely to be representative of water planet-wide. When combined with an infrared map obtained at the same time by a ground-based telescope, the results suggested the probe mission may have just been unlucky, sampling an unusually dry and warm meteorological spot on Jupiter. So said Scott Bolton, Juno principal investigator at the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, unquote. Just when we think we have things figured out, Jupiter reminds us how much we still have to learn. Juno's surprise discovery that the atmosphere was not well mixed, even well below the cloud tops, is a puzzle that we are still trying to figure out. No one would have guessed the water might be so variable across the planet, end quote. So I am still in amazed or in awe or something like that, that they would know that this water is there. I guess they measure it from Earth. How they reconfirm their theory, sometimes they're close, sometimes they're not, but it's still quite a job. So we talked about Spitzer, we talked about water in the atmosphere of Jupiter. I'm not going to talk about more because basically what they're doing is trying to explain, or maybe trying to explain, why they didn't find the amount of water that they wanted, or so on and so on. So I'm going to go to livescience.com. It's more catchy, the articles, and here's one. When did the universe wake up? This is on livescience.com 14 days ago. So it would be like February, whatever it is, 6. Okay, so livescience.com. When did the universe wake up? By transforming light-quenching hydrogen atoms into ionized gas, ultraviolet starlight may have formed overlapping giant bubbles filled with ionized hydrogen throughout the early universe. Okay, here goes. Again, when did the universe wake up? Dated 14 days ago by Paul Sutter. It was a big moment for our cosmos when the first stars awoke, but it's an elusive one for scientists. In new research, however, a team of astronomers has identified some of the oldest galaxies ever seen. These objects were already fully formed when the universe was just 680 million years old. So we're looking at some of the oldest galaxies ever seen, according to the scientists, who also found evidence that these galaxies were flooding their surroundings with extreme ultraviolet radiation. So why did that happen? I don't know. That flood formed gigantic bubbles where the neutral gas became energized and ionized, offering astronomers the first direct image of a major transformational epoch in our universe. Okay, so this is one of the major transformational epochs where natural gas became energized and ionized. Okay, we'll see what happened. Forming gigantic bubbles. Okay, before the dawn, a long time ago, there wasn't a single star shining across the universe. In the early days of our cosmos, everything was pretty uniform, just about the same average density from place to place. A bit boring, really. Yeah, I guess so. It was also depressingly neutral, quite a change from the first days of the universe. Even earlier, in the first few 100,000 years after the Big Bang, our universe was so dang hot and dense that it was a plasma. The constant cheek-to-jowl jostling had ripped apart atoms into their constituent electrons and nuclei. But all that chaos ended when the universe turned a ripe old 380,000 years old. That's when things were spread out enough and the temperatures were low enough for the electrons to combine with their nuclear families and form the first atoms of hydrogen and helium. With that event came the release of a tremendous amount of radiation that we still know and love today, the cosmic microwave background. For millions of years, the universe hung around in a state of quiet neutrality. But as the universe expanded and cooled, tiny seeds began to form. Patches of that gas were, by random chance, slightly denser than their surroundings. That minuscule enhancement gave them a truly gravitational edge, drawing material from their neighborhood onto them. Because they had grown, they had even greater gravitational influence, pulling more material onto them and so on. Okay, so let's read this again. For millions of years, the universe just hung around. Then, by chance, it became slightly denser. That minuscule enhancement gave them a gravitational edge, drawing material from their neighborhood onto them. Because they had grown, they had an even greater gravitational influence, pulling more material onto them and so on. Bit by bit, over eons, the first stars and galaxies grew in a silent, dark, neutral universe. So what was it first? Was it galaxies or was it stars that grew first? I don't know. So here's a title. It says, The Cosmic Dawn Awakens. We don't know exactly when the first stars formed, but we know that when they did so in a big, fantastic way. That's because the universe isn't neutral anymore. It's ionized. Most of the material that you interact with daily is made of complete atoms. All of the nuclei are dutifully surrounded by shells of electrons, whizzing about and combining with each other in this wonderful, complicated dance that we call chemistry. But this situation is unique. By far, the vast majority of matter in the universe today is plasma. I didn't know that. The same state that it was in long, long ago. Electrons and nuclei free to live their separate lives. How about the sun? It's plasma. Other stars? Plasma. Nebulae? Plasma. The stuff between all the stars and nebulae? Plasma. Wow. When our universe was 380,000 years old, it transferred from plasma into a neutral gas. Today, over 13 billion years later, it's mostly plasma again. Something must have happened. Something must have ripped apart all those atoms in the universe. And considering that we observed the universe to be plasma as far back as we can look, to some of the first stars and galaxies to appear on the cosmic stage, whatever caused this reionization must have happened pretty early on. I can't see that, but anyway, okay. Astronomers think the extreme ultraviolet radiation pumped out by the first generation of stars and their deaths as supernova explosions turned our universe back into plasma. Okay, but frustratingly, we don't know exactly when. Yeah, very frustrating. Even our most powerful telescopes and deep surveys don't have the ability yet to peer that far back into the universe. We can clearly see the cosmic microwave background, and we can clearly see the universe as it is today, but the middle bits are currently a cosmological mystery. We don't know when the first stars appear, an event astronomers dubbed the cosmic dawn. and we don't know when the ensuing epoch of reionization began. Okay. Now, next subtitle is Blowing Bubbles. But that situation is beginning to change. The hunt is on for older and older galaxies, along with surveys of the gas and their surroundings, as we try to get a handle on this important pubescent phase in the growth and evolution of our universe. Recently, an international team of researchers found three galaxies that are extremely faint, incredibly small, and mind-bogglingly distant. These diminutive galaxies were already fully formed and operating when our universe was just 680 million years old. That isn't surprising. We found galaxies that old before, but in this study, the researchers added a new wrinkle. By examining the radiation emanating from the environment near the trio, they discovered that the galaxies had already begun to blow bubbles of ionized plasma into their surroundings. In other words, the radiation pumping out of the galaxies had already begun to transform the universe around them, like the pimples on the forehead of a teenager. This is the first clear sign of the epoch of reionization in progress. And while astronomers had deduced that the universe had finished reionizing by the time it hit its first billionth birthday, nobody suspected that it could happen this early. These galaxies make excellent targets for the upcoming James Webb Space Telescope, which is specifically designed to study this area of our cosmic history. If the result holds up and more examples of reionization are found, we might finally be able to understand this transformative epoch from our universe's ancient violent past. Okay, good. So we have Paul M. Sutter is an astrophysicist at Stony Brook University. Okay, another theory that comes up. Astronomers are just discovering so many things I never knew could be discovered. So now I'm going to go for a break, and let's see. I'm going to play something fun for you. And when we come back, we'll talk more astronomy on CITR 101.9.
Radio.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio. Happy. Boing.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
When me touch down, bed I broke down. In a late night, me and a lockdown. She found chance to the side, rise a shotgun. In a my dark glass, cut off shots, clocks well clean. Touch the road with them blood clot team. See a girl up on a corner, cry and a scream. You know, said the boss, a fiend, a bean. She say, her man not give her the time. So of course, I know, say, me go give her the wine. Now she say, oh me, is a one of a kind. And that's so she became mine.
You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Marco.
Take him, girl, away from me, Mokar. Can't believe I. Take him, girl, away from me, Mokar.
She want a rich nigga, not a broke one. She a boss too, she get her own money. Slim thinky with a booty, yeah, she know a nigga love that shit.
Can't believe I
just a talk about the hood from New York that give her the sparks. And I'm a straight jeans pants, I'm a wallaby clocks. The boy say, oh, me not in a him class. Show him I give her all of the money in the world. Never know, say him would I lose him to a regular youth. Boy, I give her the time and blush, she say me well cute. I'll see that. Him can't believe her. Can't believe I take him girl away from me, my God. Can't believe I, him can't believe I take him girl away from me, my God.
Hey, girl, come give me like a wine, so give me like a wine, so give me wine, so give me wine, so give me wine, so my girl, come give me like a wine, so give me like a wine, so. Show me love, girl, free your mind. Give me like a wine and I'ma make you mine, yeah. Pretty girl, I'll make you mine. I know you didn't come alone, that's why you really shy. Baby girl, come free your mind. Many love to give, I wanna hold you tight. Baby girl, I hold you tight. I wanna squeeze, wanna tease, wanna please, baby girl.
From a Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girls walking, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the super stopping. Introduced like I'm shining, you my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you. Perfume down to your structure. Think I wait till
this is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up a disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot take the curve, girl, put your ass and the dumb at your butt.
We're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see your head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back, take it from the back. Like a bag you're supposed to. I know you like that. Scream, wake the neighbors when they sleep. Grab the sheets with your teeth. Wiggle your butt cheeks. Pour the styles over your body. Whip you up, treat you like a convenience store. Slick you up, take you to the balcony. Pick you up, so you can look at the city while I'm digging your kitty. Then we drive into the sunset. Pull over, get up on the hood, ma. I ain't done yet.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up a disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird can let it pay the curve, girl, put your ass and the dumb at your butt.
John, your mind.
We've been together for a few months now. Did it all four seasons to the trunk. Beverly Hills bungalows in your underclothes. In Paris, Eiffel Tower, bubble baths and showers. In the Lindo Sheen, since there's what you seen. See me flip a couple things, load the magazines. And I think you might be the right one. Whoa, wait, press the brakes, gotta investigate. But I do know, to you it don't matter. Whether my pockets are slim or fat, or whether it's BBQs or Mr. Child's platter. Even if I slip off the success ladder, even if the paragraphs didn't.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Exploding Head Movies. Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Welcome back. This is Marco on AstroTalk. I'm loving this life science website. It's got so many cool things. It's like, here's one. It says, what should we do if a planet killer asteroid takes aim at Earth? So it gets you a bit excited. And then it says, scientists just watched a newfound asteroid zoom by Earth. Then they saw its moon. And here's another one. It's not related to astronomy, but it's on life science. And the title is, neuroscientists discover engine of consciousness hiding in monkeys' brains. Now, isn't that cool? There's another one, worms frozen for 42,000 years in Siberian permafrost wriggled to life. Wow. Here's another exciting one that's good for everybody. Coronavirus spike protein just mapped leading way to vaccine. So I'm going to read about the most violent object in the solar system. So in case of you people that don't know, I was in Tokyo in 2002 working. Then I had a holiday for 4 months until next semester would be in April. So I went around Asia. I went to Taiwan in February or January. I caught SARS. So I was one of the ones that caught SARS. I wasn't allowed back into Tokyo. So I experienced this virus outbreak in China. But at that time, they were hiding it. And because they hid it, it got more serious. But now they're not hiding it. But you wonder how many of these things will keep happening in China. What can they do to mitigate them? Anyway, okay, so this is the most violent object in the solar system. If you find yourself on Palais, wear a helmet. Okay, it's on livescience.com 7 days ago. And again, it says, this is the most violent object in the solar system. New image is real that one, reveal that one of the strangest asteroids in the solar system is also the most covered in craters. Pallas at P-A-L-L-A-S at 318 miles or 512 kilometers in diameter is the third largest asteroid in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, accounting for about 7% of the region's mass. Wow. When Pallas was discovered in 1802, it was just the second asteroid ever found, and its discoverer, German astronomer Heinrich Wilhelm Matthias Olbers, originally classified as a planet. Pallas has long been known to follow a strange path through space. It plunges in and out. Sorry, I'm being distracted. It's showing the anatomical cross-section of someone's brain. So, okay. Pallas is long known to follow a strange path through space. It plunges in and out of the main belt as it follows a path around the sun. That's heavily skewed compared to the orbits of the planet. Pallas flings itself northward and southward above and below the plane of Earth's orbit around the sun, and a collection of smaller objects trails the asteroid. Now new images show the consequences of that idiosyncratic journey. So says MIT astronomer Michael Marcet, and quote, from these images, we can now say that Pallas is the most cratered object that we know in the asteroid belt. It's like discovering a new world, end quote. And asteroids in the asteroid belt move very fast, but they also tend to have highly similar orbits, the researchers wrote. When these space rocks slam into one another, the collisions can be cataclysmic, producing craters, but most of that speed is canceled out. It's a bit like driving a truck at 80 miles per hour or about 129 kilometers per hour down a highway, and the car next to you driving 82, swerving a bit and knocking its bumper into yours. It would cause some damage, but as long as both drivers kept control of their vehicles, everyone would probably be okay. Just as the vehicles would have some dings, objects in the asteroid belt often have lots of craters resulting from collisions. Some of these pockmarks are quite big, but Pallas has an unreasonable number of huge craters. When Pallas passes, it's as if a freight train plowed diagonally across that highway at speed, blasting cars. Oh, there's a misprint here. There's a rogue T floating around. I'll read this again. When Pallas passes, it's as if a freight train plowed diagonally across that highway at speed, blasting cars into blasting cars into shards of steel and plastic, and then continuing on its merry way, mostly unbothered thanks to its huge momentum. Billions of years of this pattern, which occurs twice every time Pallas orbits the Sun, has left the asteroid so pockmarked that it looks like a golf ball in the low resolution images. So, why does it say here it's the most violent object in the solar system? Maybe because it's had a lot of violent crashes, not because of the violence that it can do. Okay. Pallas experiences two or three times more collisions than Ceres or Vesta. The two largest objects in the asteroid belt, and its tilted orbit is a straightforward explanation for the very weird surface that we don't see on either of the other two asteroids, Mars had said. The images, captured using the SPHERE instrument at the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile, show that Pallas has at least 36 craters that are larger than 18 miles, 30 kilometers in diameter, including a 250-mile-wide 400-kilometer impact crater on the asteroid's equator, likely made by a collision with a 25-mile-wide 40-kilometer object. Pallas also has a bright spot on its southern hemisphere that researchers suspect may be a big salt deposit. The paper was published February 10th in the journal Nature Astronomy. So this is the first time I've heard about Pallas. It said here it's the third largest asteroid in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, so I've never heard about it. And the title was catchy. It says, this is the most violent object in the solar system. Probably violent because of the number of its collisions it's gone through, and not because it's going to create a violent situation where it will kill us all or something. So, what should we do if a planet killer asteroid takes aim at Earth? Researchers at MIT calculated which option is the best depending on the asteroid and its path through space. So this is on livescience.com. It says, what should we do if a planet killer asteroid takes aim at Earth? It is written 9 hours ago, so today, I guess. If a giant object looked like it's going to slam into Earth, humanity has a few options. Hammer it with a spacecraft hard enough to knock it off course, blast it with nuclear weapons, tugging it with a gravity tractor, or even slow it down using concentrated sunlight. Ooh, I guess a lot of these options depend on how much time we have before we find it. Okay, here we go. Well, we'll have to decide whether to visit with a scout mission first or launch a full-scale attack immediately. Those are a lot of decisions to make under existential duress, which is why a team of MIT researchers have come up with a guide published February in the journal Acta Astronautica to help future asteroid deflectors. In movies, an incoming asteroid is usually a very last-minute shock, a big, deadly rock hurtling right towards Earth like a bullet out of the darkness with only weeks or days between its discovery and its projected impact. That is a real threat, according to an April 2019 presentation by NASA's Office of Planetary Defense that Live Science attended. But NASA believes that it spotted most of the largest, deadliest objects that have even a small chance of striking Earth, the so-called planet killers. Of course, there are probably plenty of smaller rocks, still large enough to kill whole cities, that remain undiscovered. So, oh, here's an interesting thing on livescience.com. Related, top 10 ways to destroy Earth. Okay. I guess we've already found the first one. Because most of the large objects in Earth's neighborhood are already being closely watched, we'll likely have plenty of warning before one strikes Earth. Astronomers watch these space rocks as they get near Earth to see whether they're likely to cross through one of their keyholes. Every Earth-threatening asteroid gets closer and farther from Earth at different points in its orbit around the Sun. Along that path near Earth, it has keyholes. These keyholes are regions of space that it has to pass through in order to end up on a collision course during its next approach to our planet. So says lead author of the study, Sung Wook Paik, who sounds like Korean, P-A-E-K. A keyhole is like a door. Once it's open, the asteroid will pin back Earth soon after, with high probability. Okay, so enough of this doomsday scenarios. There's another article here. Two invisible stars are bending space-time deep in the Milky Way. Hooray, yay, isn't that great? Okay, thank you for listening. This is Marco. You have listened to AstroTalk. It's quiet here. I think we raised $25,000 or so. So that's good. And thank you for everybody who donated. And what's going to happen now is I'm going to probably take off and go somewhere else and not be a pest around here anymore. So again, thank you for listening. I'm just deleting all the things, like I just deleted Yip Yip Aliens. It's too bad because Yip Yip Aliens is so cool. So thank you for listening again. This is Marco. You have listened to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
Yep, yep, yep. Radio, 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 radio. Yep, 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 yep. Oh, ah, ah, ah.